And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is now 1 week since the glorious election day. And most people in the blue bubble are doing very well. Of course, the blue bubble is blue states and those of us that voted for Barack Obama, and to which I probably include new states such as Virginia, North Carolina, Ohio, Florida, Nevada, what else? Colorado. Lots of new blue states. And I got to say, the country is pretty happy. It's nice to see not just the 53% that voted for Barack Obama, but even many of those that voted for John McCain are saying that they think Obama will make a good president. Most recent poll I've seen shows that 65% of Americans think Obama will make a good president. Now, that's good, right? He won 53%, so that's another additional 12%, or, you know, some one-fourth of McCain voters preferred McCain, but also think Obama will make a good president. It's nice to see that kind of optimism. And I have to praise John McCain and even George Bush. And let me, you know, I don't praise John McCain, and I certainly don't praise George Bush very much. But John McCain, in his concession speech, I think set the right tone. I can't complain about it. To me, it was the old John McCain, the one I used to remember back in 2000, a reasonable guy, although one I certainly disagree with. And that was before they removed his brain and replaced it with Karl Rove. Apparently, the takeover of his body, the poltergeist, if you will, that took over John McCain's body and soul all during the election, put it in the control of Karl Rove. Some people call that particular poltergeist that inhabited his body as Steve Schmidt, who used to work for Karl Rove. The same guy, by the way, that apparently was behind the vicious attacks on John McCain in 2000, saying he illegitimately fathered a black baby. Well, John McCain apparently decided if you can't beat him, join him. And so for the duration of the campaign, took on the Karl Rove tactics and ran one of the nastier modern campaigns. Of course, I got to say that they've been all virtually all nasty ever since Lee Atwater in the 1980s. In any case, apparently that demon was removed when John McCain lost, and I have to say that since the election, he's been acting respectably, and all in terms of bringing this country together. George Bush, a man I don't praise very often, has also been acting, I think, very respectfully. He understands that his party lost. He just greeted, of course, Barack Obama to a trip to the White House. We know that his wife, Laura, was nice to Michelle, and that's as it should be. Transitions should be that way. They should be amicable. McCain and Bush recognize the American people have spoken, and they've lost. I have to tell you, though, not everyone in the Republican Party feels that way. Some 27% of Americans, so if a, that would be a half, not even, actually more than half, maybe two-thirds of the McCain vote, are anxious, afraid, scared about an Obama presidency. So one-quarter of the McCainites are ready to give this guy a chance. Two-thirds of them are not. This might be called the rump of the Republican Party. And so I invited a Republican strategist, one that I've had on my show many times before, Mike Lane. Many of you have heard him before. I had him on my local television show, which I have on Monday nights. I had him on last night in order to discuss this. And I actually thought that Mike Lane would be like John McCain. He would say that, okay, well, you beat us this time. We'll get you next time. We disagree, but we wish the new president well. I was wrong. Mike was angry, flustered, and seemed determined to try to attack this guy before even giving him a chance. I think you'll be interested in some of our exchanges back and forth. I'm going to play them today. We won't play them all. For one thing, I have to admit, the clip is a little distorted. This is because it's a TV show, and when they made the audio feed, it's a little distorted. I think it's easy to hear. It just may not be pleasant on the ears. But I want to play some of it for you and talk about the strange Republican attitude. Because if you're wondering where the future of the Republican Party is, those that are magnanimous in victory are the minority. Most Republicans, I fear, are a lot like Mike Lane. Let me play the clip for you, and if you want to call and comment on it, this is a live show, just give me a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me play some of our discussion, my discussion with Mike Lane last night.
I've invited Mike Lane in, Republican strategist. I'm not sure why. I mean, I thought we were going to have a calm, relaxed conversation about the future of America. Maybe I've just been living in this wonderful blue bubble that is currently for the state of Virginia and D.C. and Maryland and North Carolina and a bunch of other states. And most people I talk to are very excited by the prospect. Even some McCain voters I've talked to are willing to give Barack Obama a chance. They're excited about his being president, and they think they want to see where he goes before they criticize him. But, Mike, it seems like you're not in that category. You're tearing the guy down before he's even been inaugurated, and I got to say, I'm surprised.
No, Mark.
I thought you'd give this guy more
I'm not tearing it down. I will admit flat out I do not trust him. I don't like where I think he's going to take the country, but let's talk about his rhetoric and where he's going now.
Let me suggest to you where he's going to take the country.
He's going
to take his country where he said he would take the country in his campaign.
I hope not. If he changes now...
And that would be fair, because the American people voted on what he said in the campaign.
Right.
They voted by a quite strong majority, 53% to 46%, that this is the path they wanted the country to go. If he deviates from his campaign rhetoric, then let me suggest to you that would be wrong. In whatever direction, whether to the center or to the left from it. He told America what he would do. They voted on him. Sounds to me like you just don't respect the opinion of the American people.
First of all, 52-47, not 53-46.
53-47. According to CNN, 53-46. I looked it up before we came on.
CNN. Okay, give me a break. Now,
you can I can do the math.
Right, let's talk about...
Let me just stop this right here. Since the show, I did the math. I had said it was 53. Mike Lane had said it was 52. I did the math. I did it to the decimal point. And guess what? It was 53.3%. So if anything, I was too low. Just thought you might want to know that. Let's go back with the clip.
The leftist campaign that Obama ran and his centrist rhetoric, almost conservative rhetoric that he's been talking about for the last couple weeks, including the last couple weeks of the the campaign. If, as Chief of Staff designee Rahm Emanuel said yesterday on George Stephanopoulos, and the centerpiece of the Obama economic plan is going to shift from increasing taxes on the economy and particularly on the rich, and instead making it overall a plan that will deliver tax relief to the economy, particularly to the middle class, and forego the tax increase on the upper classes, I think that is something Republicans will support, and the president will be off to a wonderful start.
The president
would be
idiotic if he decided to break his campaign promises 2 weeks into the presidency. He would lose respect among Democrats, independents, and even some Republicans.
Rahm Emanuel was on George Stephanopoulos yesterday. He was asked point blank four times, is the tax increase on the wealthiest Americans
going to
be part of the economic package? And Rahm Emanuel refused to say yes four times.
Well, that's right, because first of all, there's the surplus package. It's not going to be part of there. That's in the lame duck Congress. It may not happen in the first month or two of the Obama presidency.
Will it happen in the tax package? Will it be part of the overall tax package?
It can be part of this one. It can be part of the next one. Look.
Okay, the centerpiece in the campaign was the tax increase on the wealthy.
Now the centerpiece on the campaign is suddently
tax relief for the middle class.
It's amazing to me. If Barack Obama had said in the campaign that he was going to do tax relief on the middle class first, okay?
He didn't say that.
No, I'll tell you, if he had said that, and if he had said that, and he had not mentioned that we're going to raise taxes on the rich. He just didn't say it.
It was all over his website. I have it saved.
Stick with me here. Hypothetically, if Obama had run a different campaign, had run a campaign where he didn't tell people what he was going to do, where he said, I'm going to cut taxes if you earn under $250,000, and if it goes over $250,000, he didn't say, or he said he wouldn't raise taxes on them. Okay, and then he decided to raise taxes on them, the Republicans would have a holy fit. Saying you're going to raise taxes on the rich does not win anybody votes. In fact, it was a very brave move of him. He had to do it because we have the most massive deficit in American history. George Bush doubled the deficit. So we need to pay that money back somehow. He didn't do it to win votes. What he's doing, amazing to me, is that he took a position that would not win him votes, that would lose him votes. He still became president of the United States. Right now, we have an incredible economic crisis. In an economic crisis, what you do is you cut taxes to help the stimulus. That makes sense. Now, it may be that he cuts taxes for those under $250,000 now and raises it for all those over $280,000 6 months from now. Who knows? It doesn't matter. I fully expect Barack Obama to keep his campaign promises. And if he doesn't, to me, it would be a lot like George Bush, the first George Bush Sr., who said, read my lips, no new taxes, broke his campaign promise, and the Democrats didn't like him for it, even though he did things the Democrats felt he should do. The Republicans didn't like him for it. He deserted his promise, and lo and behold, he lost to Clinton in 92. Barack Obama dare not fall into that same trap. He will do what he said he was elected to do.
All I can say is, not only was it Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff designee, who yesterday four times...
It's not his decision.
Four times, he's speaking for the president-elect when he's on that show.
Obviously, they haven't made up their mind yet.
Not only did he refuse to confirm it, but in the press conference on Friday, the president-elect Obama was asked the exact same question.
And he said, we'll see about economic time.
And he wouldn't confirm it either.
And that's smart.
So.
Because it depends on where our
campaign promise, right. But he didn't say that in the campaign.
He didn't say he would do it in the first 100 days.
He's going to do it.
I guarantee he'll do it.
He played class warfare, which is always a winning economic thing in the campaign.
Promising to raise taxes is never a winning economic thing.
After he played class warfare all throughout the campaign. Yes.
Hold on. Is it class warfare?
Yes, it is. It's class warfare to say that you're going to poke the rich and redistribute it to the poor.
Mike,
he's going to redistribute the richest accumulated wealth to the poor.
Did George Bush and John McCain play class warfare when they decided to soak the poor and help the rich? Is that class warfare or not? Is it only class warfare if you want to redistribute the tax burden from the middle class to more wealthy people who used to have the higher tax burden?
Under George Bush.
All right, I'll stop it here and protect your ears a bit. I think Mike was getting a little hot under the collar. It's fascinating to see how the mind of a Republican works. As I understood the tax plan of Barack Obama, and it is frankly the thing that Republicans have most focused on. They don't seem to want to talk about the environment or education or health care or all the other things that Obama said he would do. As I understand Barack Obama's tax plan, he would lower taxes on those making under it's either $150,000 or $200,000. He wouldn't raise anyone's taxes under $250,000. And yes, he said he might well have to raise people's taxes over $250,000. Now, you don't say you're going to raise people's taxes in order to win votes. Okay? That's not a very popular thing. I don't know anyone of any income bracket that says soak the rich. I will feel better if the rich pay more taxes. I mean, there may be some of us. What I think people want is a redistribution of the tax burden. Under George Bush Jr., the tax burden shifted so that middle class and poor people would pay a greater percentage of the nation's taxes, and the rich would pay a lesser percentage. Barack Obama wants to return it to the burden of the Clinton years. Now, he could have said, like John McCain said, I'll cut everybody's taxes. I'm the Tooth Fairy. I'm Santa Claus. Everybody will have a horse and 40 acres and a mule and a chicken in every pot. I believe that was Herbert Hoover who promised a chicken in every pot. I mean, he could promise gold, moon, and stars, but he didn't. And it's amazing to me the psychology of somebody like Mike Lane. He thought that, Democrats love to see the rich suffer. No, it's not like that. There may be a few. It's really not that Democrats want the rich to suffer. It's that we're in a massive debt. The debt has more than doubled from $4 trillion to close to $10 trillion in just 8 years. A trillion used to be a lot of money. Apparently, it's not that much anymore. We got to pay it back somehow. And when you cut taxes for the middle class and the working people of America, as Barack Obama will do for certain, you got to pay some of it back somehow. And, yes, I think he will keep his campaign promise, and he will raise taxes on people making over $250,000. Now, there's no rush to do this. I mean, that's why Rahm Emanuel and Barack Obama didn't say they're going to do it in their first 100 days, and I don't blame them. We're in the middle of a recession. It may end up being a depression. And, you know, he may wait to raise taxes on the rich because, let's face it, You don't really want to raise taxes in the middle of a recession. He may do it right away. He may not. I don't think it affects rich spending habits very much, because if you make $300,000 a year, then you probably have several million in the bank, and probably your taxes, if they go up a slight amount or not, won't affect your spending habits much at all. But it's fascinating to me because Mike Lane seemed to think that Barack Obama won because poor people want to see the rich people pay more taxes. No, middle-class people just want relief for themselves. They don't want the rich to pay more. They just understand the rich have to pay more because somebody's got to pay more. It's the psychology is fascinating. Here, Obama did a brave thing. He said he was going to raise taxes. He said so knowing that nobody wants to pay more taxes and it would lose him some votes, and he won anyway. And Mike Lane seems to feel that if he would just break his promise, he'll be respected. As I pointed out, that if you break your promise, just as George H.W. Bush, as George Bush Sr. broke his promise about no new taxes, you're not respected by anybody. Obama would certainly lose the respect of his own party. He would lose the respect of independents. He would even lose the respect of Republicans, what few respect him. He's got to keep his promise, and he will. And I love how the Republican solution to Barack Obama is to have him disregard everything he ran his campaign on and adopt the Republican solutions. You know what, Mike Lane, with all due respect, if that were the answer, the American people would have voted for John McCain. He needs to get over it. Let me play a little bit more of the clips, and let me encourage you to call in if you want to comment on any of this. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We've got Kevin on the line. Kevin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello?
Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
You're there.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
I hear you. You can't hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Go ahead.
A lot of, you see, you have to understand, a lot of this is lotto fever. You know, a lot of people would rather focus on the opportunity or the chance of becoming rich instead of focusing on the poverty they may be in.
Joe the plumber, for example.
Yes.
He's the classic example. He's living in a fantasy world that somehow his plumbing business is going to make millions, and in that point he'll be able to buy it, and then 20 years from now when he reaches super success, then he'll worry about taxes. So he's willing to suffer today in the hopes that 20 years from now he becomes this grand success. The irony is most people who do put in the work do get lucky, because it takes some luck, do make a ton of money. By the time they make that much money, they're willing to give a little bit more up because they understand that they can afford to. But I don't know. There are people like Joe the Plumber around, that's for sure.
Well, but the rich have been doing this to the poor for centuries, you know. It's the lotto fever. It really is.
It's lotto fever. It's also, I think, a disassociation. If you ask most Americans, the great majority of Americans think that they do better than the great majority of Americans. Very few Americans will admit they're poor. Very few Americans will admit they make below the median, the middle American level of wages. They'll say, oh, no, we make something above. Because people don't want to – people see money and salary as a failure, which I think is wrong, because there are plenty of very good, hardworking, patriotic Americans that do jobs such as, you know, teacher or police officer or firefighter or talk radio host on the horn, where we make extremely little money but recognize that what we do is very valuable. And nonetheless, I think part of it is this sort of idea that, oh, yeah, I'll become rich someday and then I won't want to pay taxes. When the sad thing is, most people who are rich have more than enough and don't mind paying a little bit extra in taxes.
Yes. Well, it's also to keep those who crave power in power.
Well, it certainly is. But what's interesting is that if you look at the people with postgraduate degrees, they went overwhelmingly for Obama. Mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly. It tends to be the people, some working class people, some middle class people, who are worried, and ironically, they're the ones that are going to do best under Barack Obama's plan. They'll do even better than the poor because they'll get bigger tax cuts. Poor people don't pay as much in taxes. Maybe in 4 years, come re-election, they'll understand their fears are misplaced.
But if you ever want to get rich quick in this country, a good way is making your money off of poor people.
Well, that's...
And that's why, you know, because think about it. Who, you know, who's fighting this war? Poor people.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And, well, poor people, you know, don't have many choices, so they have to do a lot of the things that other people in this country don't want to do.
And, you know, who's become very rich and who buys the big houses along Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, you know, defense contractors, and, you know, poor people become desperate enough to work for Halliburton.
Sure. Sure.
You know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but so, I just wanted to say that, you know, the lotto fever, and that's what. And like,
I get it, but what was strange, Kevin, though, was it seemed to me it was interesting to me Mike Lane's psychology, not the psychology of Joe the Plumber, which is what you're talking about, which I get. It's misplaced and it's wrong, but I understand where he's coming from. But Mike Lane was taking it one step further. He actually felt that Obama voters were getting some kind of perverse joy out of making rich people pay more taxes. You know, he doesn't understand that when Obama said he was going to raise taxes on those making more than $250,000, Obama understood he would lose votes because of it. That's not a positive for anybody. Poor people aren't better off if the rich pay more taxes. Middle-class people aren't better off, and rich people aren't better off. Nobody's better off except, well, let's face it, the deficit goes down, and we all understand that a deficit is a huge problem. So he did something that was not popular. And Mike Lane has this perverse idea that Democrats love it when we, quote, soak the rich, unquote. And so
the thing is...
Go ahead.
Okay. What's his name again?
His name is Mike.
Mike wants to weaken government. When you weaken...
Right.
A weak government is good for corporations. And that's who he's being bought off. You know, a huge deficit is a weak government.
That
is the ongoing neocon value.
Well, Ronald Reagan used to talk about this, that if you bankrupt the government, then you can't do all those social spending that Republicans hate so much, things like Social Security and Medicare and welfare and education and all those things where we actually get some benefit from our government. If you bankrupt the government, then it can't afford to provide those services.
Yeah,
so,
guess who comes in and provides?
Exactly. Well, the military always seems to get their share. Thanks, Kevin, for your call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
I want to play a little bit more of my exchange with Mike Lane. It's interesting when he talks about Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel, of course, is the new Obama chief of staff. And it's fascinating to hear Mike's inflation of the role of a chief of staff. Now, of course, I'm very glad that Obama chose Emanuel. I like Rahm Emanuel. I like him because he's very smart. He's an extremely good tactician. I give him a lot of credit, in fact, for the Democratic takeover of Congress, both houses of Congress, in 2006. He is brilliant, and he can be ruthless. And that's okay. He is the bad cop to Obama's good cop, and that's okay. When I say ruthless, I don't mean unprincipled. I don't mean immoral. I don't mean unethical. I think Rahm Emanuel is extremely ethical. What I mean is he is someone who could chew someone out. Who could use foul language if he needed to, who could tell people to go fly a kite in unflattering terms. And a president needs that. He's the enforcer. It is the role of the chief of staff to keep everyone working for the president on the same team. You don't want, for example, leaking to the press things that are unflattering about the president. You don't want if two policy wings of government disagree, they're supposed to go. Present their cases before President Obama, and President Obama decides, and then everyone goes forward. Rahm Emanuel is a terrific enforcer. Now, of course, he worked in the Clinton White House, did a very good job there. He worked in Congress as the number four Democrat, as chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. It was his job to get Democrats elected. He did such a terrific job that apparently there are still some bruises left in the Republican Party. Listen to how Mike Lane complains vociferously about Rahm Emanuel.
It's an exciting time to be an American. People are cheering in the streets. People are excited about the prospects of a new, young, intelligent man, someone who's cool under pressure, taking over from the radicalness of the George Bush administration, someone who believes in open government rather than closed government. In fact, Barack Obama said today he's going to close Guantanamo Bay and allow all the prisoners there to have trials in the United States according to the Constitution, a subject that he once taught. Most Americans are happy. 59% are excited. 67% are proud. John McCain seems ready to move on. George Bush seems ready to move on. But there is a part of the Republican Party. There is a part that, I don't know, David Brooks called it the rump of the Republican Party, that is still angry, that is still afraid. 27%, in fact, of Americans are afraid of Barack Obama. And maybe they're the ones that came out and cheered at the Palin rallies. Maybe I've got one sitting to the left of me. I'm not sure. His name is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist. And rather than being, I don't know, I expected him to be magnanimous, to congratulate me, to say you won this one fair and square. He seems awfully angry. You're angry now, huh, Mike?
Mark, you did win this one fair and square. You did assemble a coalition of perhaps lesser-informed voters who went along with the program here. I don't minimize...
Lesser-informed?
I don't...
What's interesting is intellectuals of your party seem to have left your party and vote for Obama.
I don't minimize the historical nature of Senator Obama's victory. I wish him well. I hope that over the course of time he proves to be a good president. I don't trust him. I don't think he will prove to be a good president. When he does something right, I will come on your show and I will cheer for him. When he does something wrong, I will enthusiastically and cheerfully oppose him. I expect to lose on the majority of those opposition things because he is setting up an administration that's going to be a Democratic steamroller. He's got the majorities in the House and the Senate.
Right.
He doesn't need Republican votes. He's going to ignore Republicans.
We might need a few to stop
us all about. And he's going to steamroll Republicans in Congress.
We have, you know what? Just to be clear, we have 57. Alaska, Minnesota, and Georgia are out.
And
it's unlikely we're going to win all three. We may not win any of them. We will probably need a Republican or two to prevent a filibuster, but I'm hopeful that Olympia Snow or Susan Collins or our inspector will come and help us out.
It's going to be set up as a steamroller over Republican ideas. There will be no opportunity in the House of Representatives for Republican alternative votes. There'll be no substitutes.
In other words, it'll be just the way it was when Republicans were in control.
But Nancy Pelosi promised it was going to be different, and Barack Obama promises things will be bipartisan, and they won't.
So here's me, Mike. When the Republicans are in charge, when
I didn't defend Republicans.
In 2000, Al Gore wins a substantial majority of the popular vote, more than half a million.
He won by half the width of a hair.
He's the choice, half a million people.
Half the width of a hair.
He's the choice of most voters in Florida. He's the one who would win the electoral vote if it hadn't been for the court intervention.
Just to interrupt the conversation a bit, Al Gore beat George Bush by 540,000 votes, more than half a million votes. It's not the Obama landslide, but it was a solid victory. And, of course, he also won the majority in Florida. So just always keep that in the back of your mind. It's interesting as we get into this. We hear Mike, I think, represent the Republican voice well. They're afraid, and they're so concerned, and now they want to be bipartisan. We're going to talk about this more. I'm going to play more of the clip in a minute. But here you had a Republican White House, a Republican Congress, that laughed at the idea that Democrats should play a role in governing. I mean, they snickered. They would put Democrats in the basement. Remember when they did that to John Conyers? They would make sure that if he wanted to hold a hearing, he had to do it in the basement. They would kick us out of committee rooms. They would make sure when they were in the majority, they ran roughshod over all of us. I'm about to talk about what happened in the Patriot Act. You're going to hear this in the clip. And now that Republicans have lost, now they want to be bipartisan. I mean, you can just take it to some point in your daily life, right? Maybe you have a boss, maybe you've worked retail and you have a boss and your boss is just cruel and miserable and mistreats you mercilessly and is completely unfair to you. And then lo and behold, you do your job well and you get promoted and suddenly your boss is your employee. And now this same boss who is brutal and cruel to you says, well, how come you're treating me so meanly? You used to complain about this treatment when I gave it to you. Why are you giving it back to me? It's pathetic, is what it is. But let's play some more.
And at that moment, and also in 2004, when George Bush got the lowest re-election total of any president in American history, Caldwell declared a mandate. He didn't care how close it was. We're in charge. We have a conservative nation for decades to come. We're not going to listen to any Democratic ideas. We hate bipartisanship. He said it. He ruled that way. And George Bush has just gotten, and his party have gotten thrown out on his ear. What's interesting to me is the Democrats, having won a substantial majority, frankly, better than Bill Clinton did, better than Ronald Reagan did in 1980 when he first came into office, more Democrats in the House, more Democrats in the Senate, he's saying he's going to work with Republicans. And what's interesting to me is you're saying if the Democrats treat the Republicans the way the Republicans treated the Democrats, that's grossly unfair. And it's just fascinating to watch you flip-flop like that.
Mark, first of all, let's go back to your first ridiculous comment, which was that Al Gore would have won had it not been for the courts. In fact, Al Gore went to court precisely because he wasn't winning.
Who went to court first? George Bush went to court first.
Bush went to court to prevent the stealing of the election.
To prevent the
And the courts agreed that the election should not be stolen the way Al Gore was trying to do it. Now, let's talk about what the Republicans did and what the Democrats did.
They declared, the Republicans, they said that they could do whatever they wanted.
George Bush came to Washington very naively, and he thought he was going to be able to work with Democrats. He thought he'd have a bipartisan administration the same way he had in Texas. He worked very well with Democrats down in Texas, and he extended the olive branch, and even during his inaugural address, he shook hands with the Speaker of the House then.
He shook their hands.
And said, let's work together. And before he could even walk back to the White House in the inaugural parade, the Democrats were shooting him in the back and turning it into a bipartisan thing.
First of all, the Speaker of the House is a Republican.
George Bush learned through time that he couldn't work with the congressional Democrats because they were not interested in working with him. Come Barack Obama now, okay? He says he wants to be bipartisan. He doesn't want to be bipartisan. He wants to say it. He wants to create the illusion. But the single thing of appointing Rahm Emanuel as the chief of staff of the White House says spades about what he wants to do in terms of bipartisanship. To it, nothing. He wants to steamroll the Republicans. He wants to have Rahm Emanuel do what he does best, which is to whip the Democrats all into the same team, steamroll the Republicans. There will be no opportunity for offering of substitute motions to the Republicans the way Nancy Pelosi promised when she came to power. There will be no opportunities for Republicans to have input. There will be no bipartisan meetings at the White House where we all work it out. This is going to be a Democrat show, House, Senate, and White House, start to finish. And you know what? I don't blame him for doing it because he's got the power to do it. Why should he work with the Republicans? He's not going to. He's being disingenuous when he says he's going to, and he shouldn't.
First of all, Mike, it's an amazing rewrite of history because I was working in Congress right after September 11th. I was there when members of Congress of both parties stood together saying God bless America on the steps of the Capitol. I was there when we drafted the first version of the Patriot Act, a version I am very proud to say came out of the House Judiciary Committee unanimously. It's something that almost historians never talk about. Unanimous. Maxine Waters on the left to Lamar Smith on the right, we came to an incredible bipartisan agreement that protected civil liberties, still went after terrorists. The far left and the far right supported it, and George Bush took that perfect, unanimous, bipartisan thing, threw it in the trash.
Because it was amazing. To protect the American people.
Well, Smith thought it was enough. Sensenbrenner thought it was enough.
No, Chairman Sensenbrenner supported the new one.
Was rolled, and you know
He supported the new one.
Daryl Issa. All of the Republicans on the far right supported it. It's an amazing rewrite.
The power that chairmen have. They can stop anything from going next to their committee if they want.
Yes, they can.
A chairman can do that.
I can get Feingold was rolled by Dashiell.
You don't even need to convene your committee.
It's not true.
How's the committee going to get convened if you don't convene it, Chairman?
The leader of a party can, in the House of Representatives, I assure you, Mike, I was there, can overrule a chairman. They can roll the chairman. It doesn't happen often, but it happened on the Patriot Act, and I was there.
Chairman Sensenbrenner supported the rewrite of the Patriot Act.
No, he didn't.
The Democrats did not.
He did not support the rewrite. It didn't go through the committee. You know that.
Let me ask you this.
The version that became law never went through committee. You understand that?
I understand.
It was brought directly to the floor against Sensenbrenner's will. He was rolled.
Could the act that passed the Judiciary Committee...
I won't get too far afield.
Could it pass today? The answer is no, it couldn't. The Democrats would not support even the one they supported unanimously back in 2001.
There was a compromise, and the point is that George Bush hated compromise, refused compromise, ran this country to the radical right. Now, the American people have rejected this, and they have voted overwhelmingly.
I must stop the tape here just to make sure you understand. Sometimes I think the truth gets lost in the yelling. I try. It's hard. You know, he's talking at the same time as I am, and it's hard sometimes to get a word in edgewise on my own show. But just so you understand, normally legislation does go through committees. Mike Lane is right about that. And normally a committee chair can stop legislation in its tracks. He's right about that too. But he's wrong that it happens all the time. The committee chair actually works at the behest of the Speaker of the House, in the case of the House, the head of the party. That's true, by the way, on the Republican side too. The minority leader controls the chairman. And if a speaker wants to, she can roll right over the chairman. For example, no matter how much John Conyers wants to do impeachment, Nancy Pelosi, as the head of the party in the House, has the right to roll right over him and insist that he does not. She may or may not exercise that power. Generally, most speakers give a lot of leeway to chairmen, but not always. And in the case of the Patriot Act, the Republican chairman was James Sensenbrenner, head of the Judiciary Committee. He supported the grand compromise that I worked on, that I'm very proud of, the one that every single Republican and Democrat on the committee supported, one that protected civil liberties while allowing us to go after terrorists in the way that we should. And what happened is the speaker at the time, Dennis Hastert, who was actually controlled by Tom DeLay, overruled Chairman Sensenbrenner, Jim Sensenbrenner, at whether it was at Bush's behest or Tom DeLay's behest, I'm not sure which. But they rolled him. That's even what they call it. They rolled him. By the way, Tom Daschle rolled Senator Feingold. Feingold and Leahy were preventing the Patriot Act, the bad one, from being passed in the Senate. Daschle got concerned about his election chances, and he rolled Leahy. So on both sides, chairmen of the party were rolled. Mike just doesn't really understand how it works, and you know a lot of people don't. I think sometimes that's why it's good to have an insider like me on the radio. But we go on. We go on talking about this, and it's just fascinating listening to the pleas, the P-L-E-A-S, the pleas of the Republican. Please, please. I'm using both words. Please. The pleas and the pleas. Please be bipartisan. And it's, you know, obviously it's like someone who's losing a game and says, all right, we'll take the tie. It's like, I'm beating you by 25 points. Now you'll take a tie? Yeah, let's just split it and call it even. No. It doesn't work like that. Let's play on.
They have voted overwhelmingly to give this country a new chance.
No, they have not voted overwhelmingly. They voted 52 to 47. This is not a landslide. This is a solid...
53 to 46.
This is a solid, impressive
victory.
It is
a landslide.
This is not a landslide.
It's a landslide.
No, it's no landslide.
The point is the American people have made their decision.
I'm conceding President Obama...
It's just interesting to me that you're finding this so hard. Rahm Emanuel is not working to whip Democrats anymore.
That's all he does.
He is the chief of staff.
He does not work for
Barack Obama.
He has no
relationship.
That's
not his job.
Yes, it is.
He's the chief of staff.
Okay.
No, the role of the chief of staff is to make sure that all the people working for the president are following the will of the president.
Mark.
And it's his role to whip Democrats or the cabinet, if they include some Republicans, to make sure they are doing the president's will.
Whose job is it when...
Whose
job is it to call the Republican leader when there's something coming up and they say, oh, how are the Republicans going to do this? And the president says, why don't you call John Boehner and find out what the Republicans are... Who does that? It's Rahm Emanuel who's going to do that.
It could be.
It's the chief of staff. That's his job.
Who's the current Republican chief of staff?
Who's
George Bush's chief of staff?
Hang on a second.
Tell me who it is.
I doubt very much that John Boehner will ever get a phone call from Rahm Emanuel, and if he does, he's not going
to
answer it.
Who is the current chief of staff?
I should know
I'm doing it safe.
Josh Bolton, former budget director.
Right. Now, Josh Bolton, a man who, when subpoenaed by the House of Representatives, when he was held in contempt by the entire House of Representatives, said, I will not obey the law, I will not obey the Constitution. He said to Congress, F you. In the strongest possible terms, he said, I will go to jail rather than follow my constitutional responsibilities. That's Josh Bolton.
Mark,
now, he's
Mark,
not the face of George Bush.
The Constitution prevents the Congress from subpoenaing the personal staff of the president. It may
Mike,
not happen. It's called the separation of powers.
25 years of American history, not a single presidential advisor has ever disobeyed a subpoena of the legislature until this one. And
the legislature has no constitutional authority to subpoena the personal staff of
the
president.
Your view apparently differs from not only 225 years of constitutional scholars and courts, it also differs from the Republican judge appointed by George Bush who told Josh Bolten he had to obey that subpoena. My point is this. The Republicans have decided that they are going to run anti-Democrats as far as even going beyond the limits of the Constitution, and you're complaining about Rahm Emanuel. I find that amazing. Amazing.
I told you Emanuel is the right guy at the right time for the right job.
And I tell you,
I just say it is positive that Barack Obama has no intention of working with Republicans. He's not going to be bipartisan. I wouldn't be bipartisan
about him.
He has an agenda he wants to ram through, and he's going to be successful for the most part in doing it.
Good.
And
I hope so.
And to be grudge Republicans.
I hope so.
To begrudge Republicans the opportunity to cheerfully cast a nay vote against the excesses of the Democratic monopoly.
They can cast all the nay votes they want.
Why are you against this?
They cast all the nay votes they want. I'll tell you this. Republican Mel Martinez of Florida, Senator, not someone seems particularly moderate, also agreed that Rahm Emanuel was a perfect choice, someone who could get the job done for Barack Obama. But, you know, I guess some people are a lot angrier than others, and that's okay.
It's a time to say nice things,
and that's why it surprises me that you're not saying them.
Because I want to warn our audience that Rahm Emanuel is proof positive that Barack Obama
does not want to be bipartisan.
You're
talking to the man before he's even done anything, and that's what, you know what it tells me, Mike? Is that you are going to be the person that it doesn't matter what this president does. Barack Obama could bring world peace, a massive surplus, a tremendous economy, and you would be naysaying him because, he shared his toys in kindergarten.
No.
I mean, this is the kind of Republican Party.
If you bring world peace, a vibrant economy, I'll be on his team.
If you continue, and you and your party continue this way, I have to tell you, we're going to win even bigger in 2010, even bigger in 2012. The American people are tired of this.
They are tired of,
he pals around with terrorists. Oh, he's a Marxist. Oh, he's going to kill us all. Oh, his middle name's Hussein. Run, scared, hide.
Okay, I'll stop the shout fest. People in the chat room are like, wow, Mark, you're getting heated. I think the only thing that really got me heated was when he started talking about Rahm Emanuel as a partisan chief of staff. And such an important person. And so I asked him who the current chief of staff was. Partly I did so to let him know that, you know, the chief of staff really, their role is an enforcer. I mean, their role is a implementer. They don't decide policy. They listen to the president and they implement whatever the president wants done, which is why we don't often know their names very much. And Mike was having a fit over Rahm Emanuel, so I asked him who Bush's chief of staff was, and he couldn't remember. And then I reminded him his name was Josh Bolten. And then I reminded him that Josh Bolten was held in contempt by the entire House of Representatives, not just the Judiciary Committee. The entire House voted him in contempt, which means they can put him in jail for refusing to obey a subpoena. What I didn't bring up, because, well, it's hard to get a word in edgewise in some of these shout fests, what I didn't bring up was that when Richard Nixon refused to obey a subpoena with regard to certain tapes that he had, he ended up losing articles of impeachment in the House Judiciary Committee and finally resigning from office. This is serious stuff. And Mike and the Bush's strange constitutional interpretations don't change the fact that for 200 years, this is the first administration that has ever gotten away with not responding to a subpoena. And so he's complaining about Rahm Emanuel when his guy, Bush's chief of staff, is not only partisan. He said Josh Bolten was bipartisan. He's not only partisan, he's disobeying the Constitution of the United States. And as I pointed out, let's face it, Mike Lane is criticizing him before he's even been elected. So don't sound surprised when after he's elected, he says, oh, no, he did this wrong, he did that wrong. Republicans are determined not to support their country, not to support their president, but to look for any flaw they can possibly find in our new president. And I wanted to play this so that you could get an idea of what we're dealing with. Because when we're ahead, when we're winning, when we're able to change this country for good, we have to keep looking behind our backs at those that care less about the American people and care more about their party. Juanita's been hanging on a very long time. Juanita, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing good. I don't have Mike Lane next to me, so I can be calm now.
Yeah, I had one of those with a friend of mine the other day.
Really?
And I had to fight back, and I don't know if we're friends now or not. But anyway, I had to do it.
It got heated, Juanita?
Oh, yeah.
And it was about
it
Obama?
Everything. Oh, yeah.
And what was she saying? Was she calling him a terrorist or anything, or what?
Well, she didn't start with that. She said she didn't get around to it by the time I was saying stuff. She just all of a sudden said, you know, this world is really going downhill, and it's going to be even worse with the man they put in there. And I said, well, I don't agree with that. I said, you know, I'm thinking that we got the best one, that God gave us a second chance, and that I said that I think that we'd have really gone downhill the other way. And she said, well, he stands for it. He doesn't stand for anything we Americans believe in. And I said, that's a lie.
What about the 50.3% of us that voted for him? Are we no longer Americans? What does she mean? See, that's the kind of thing that I guess...
Everything that America doesn't stand for.
You know, it's okay. Look, if Republicans say Obama stands for things Republicans don't stand for, I respect that. If your friend had said Obama doesn't stand for anything I stand for, if your friend had said that, or that myself and my family, we disagree with everything Obama stands for, that would have been fine. That free speech, you can disagree, respectful opposition, you can say why. But when you start saying Obama doesn't stand for things America stands for, I would just look at her and laugh. And say, now, wait a minute. You're saying the majority of Americans are not American. 53.3% of Americans are not American. Well, you know, maybe you're living in the wrong country. It's that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
We were on the phone. And anyway, I just started telling her some of the lies that they had told about him. I said, he's not a Muslim, which would be okay.
Did she think so?
And
did she think he was a Muslim?
Oh, she thinks all of that stuff.
Well, you know what? Here's one thing you can show her, Juanita.
No,
let me
help you out. No, you don't know. It's just like that guy. You're not going to. She's not going to.
Well, but Mike Lane, as unreasonable as he was yet last night, would not say Barack Obama is a Muslim. So, I mean, he's strongly a Republican, and he wants to tear Obama down, no question about it. But he would never say Mike Lane, and I know Mike Lane. I've been debating him for years now. He would never say Obama's not an American or that he's a Muslim. What I was going to say is, and you may not want to get into this with your friend ever again, but on my website, if you look back on RadioInsideScoop.com, I found, not me personally, others found too, they found the source of the rumor that Obama's a Muslim. It comes from one person. Did you know this? It came from one guy who's admitted to sending out all those emails that began the rumor. His name is Andy.
They want to believe anything like that.
But what's interesting is we've actually traced the rumor
from
to
the church. This is from the church down here. And
I understand. But what I'm saying is we've actually traced the rumor to its source. His name is Andy Martin. He happens to be a vicious anti-Semite. He's the guy that talks about, crazy Jew judges because he files a lot of frivolous lawsuits. I mean, he has quite a nasty, nasty past. He was on Fox News, and he admitted that he was the source of the rumors, and he also admitted that they weren't true. Anyway, all of that's on my website. If you scroll down a bit, RadioInsideScoop.com. Anyone who wants to, if there's any of these people that say he's a Muslim, maybe just maybe a few of them, maybe they're all impervious to reason, but maybe a few of them, if you show them that the guy that made up the rumor is certifiably wacko. I mean, the man is crazy. In fact, he was diagnosed as having, it's on my website, idiopathic psychological problems, and they took away his law license. I mean, he was that wacko. Maybe some people will see that, this at least is untrue.
I just wish that she could see what we've got. You know, that's the thing. She thinks we're going
I think someone like her.
Downhill.
Yeah, I don't think no matter how well Obama succeeds, she'll always be against him. And I just wish they'd say the real reason.
But
you know,
comes if from someone the church down here, you know, and you
well then say so. Say,
well,
you know what?
I
don't like Barack Obama because I want to persecute gay people, or I don't like Barack Obama because I want to control a woman's body. And I think
we're
should
supposed to kill the gays. Is that the person?
You know, I got to tell you something. I remember, Juanita. I remember. You know, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and I remember going up to the north because I went to school in Boston and learning about the difference between northern racism and southern racism. I, as a southerner, I thought I knew what racism was. Racism mm-hmm. was all those bigots that said, I hate the N-word. And I saw them, as most of us in the South have, and I knew who they were. And they were very open and proud of who they were, and I stayed away from them. And then I came north, and I found all these people who were racist but didn't admit to being racist. Oh, no, I love black people. I just don't want them in my home. That kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you know, I prefer southern racism. At least the southern racists, they just put it out there. They say, I'm racist. I hate the N-word. And, okay.
I've heard a lot of black people say that same thing.
At least you know where you stand. You know where you stand. And I look at people like your friend Juanita, and I say, you know what? If you don't like Barack Obama because you want to persecute gay people, because you want to control women's reproduction, because you don't like people having sex, and because, you know, your minister, you follow and do whatever he says, then you know what? Say so. I don't like Barack Obama because my church told me to hate him and I do everything they say. That would be honest, and I would respect you for it. If you tell me I will never vote for somebody who doesn't believe in controlling women's bodies, all right, I disagree with you strongly, but I respect that. But then they don't do that. They make up stuff. Oh, he's a Muslim. Oh, he pals around with terrorists.
Because that's what they want to hear.
They don't want to admit the real reason they don't like the guy. You know, maybe it's because he's black. Even if they were to say that, I won't vote for him because he's black. That is honest. It's despicable, but it's honest. And I actually have more respect for an upfront racist than a closet racist.
Well, that's really true. But what I wanted to say about the guy you were talking to.
Yeah.
Now, I live in Florida, and I've watched all of the election and all the stuff that went on. All the trials, and there was a lot of them. And Bush tried to shortcut it. I don't know if he's listening or not, but he tried to shortcut it right away. He asked the Supreme Court to step in. Do you remember that?
Right.
And then
do I remember it.
And they turned it down to begin with. He had to go
That's
through
right.
all this other stuff. And
that
then when
exactly
our Supreme
right.
Court said, count the votes, I mean, we were so happy. Even
right.
if our candidate had lost, we were happy about it.
As long as you count the votes. Look, you know, when George Bush, the first George Bush, won the election of 1988, you know, I wasn't happy about it. I had supported Dukakis, but I recognized that he won the election fair and square, that the majority of my fellow citizens disagreed with me, and, you know, I licked my wounds, lived to fight another day. And
I tried to like Bush. I tried to see something in him because I took a dislike to him to begin with, and that's not always fair, you know. But every time you would hear him, and I used to listen to all the news, so we didn't have any talk radio to listen to then. And so I listened to all the news, and I read all the news on the Internet and all that kind of stuff. And every time he would get up about something, he'd say, well, I hope that the Democrats will support us in this. You know, it doesn't look like they're going to now. He'd always say something derogatory. This was before 9/11, too. No matter what it was, and the Democrats were just falling all over themselves to please him, and they
were.
Still are to some extent. And
I think a new day has dawned, Juanita. I don't think you'll see. I mean, you know, we got 2 more months of this madness.
This man on here was saying, you know, that Obama wasn't going to be bipartisan and all that kind of stuff, which
right.
I hate bipartisanship, but the way Obama says it, it sounds reasonable to me. It's different the way he explains it. And just to be bipartisan, you know, to somebody that gets up and you watch them, they'll get up in the Congress and Senate and they'll insult the Democrats. When the Democrats last took control in 2006, they would get up and just belittle every way. Oh, we didn't do it this way, or we didn't do it that way. You're not doing it right. You need to do this. You need to do that. No matter what, they were in.
And what I was trying to tell Mike is the American people are sick of it. And if they continue to do this, we're going to win bigger victories in 2010 and 2012.
Yeah.
You know, the pendulum in American history tends to swing back and forth. And usually after one party wins a big victory, the other party wins. After the Democrats won in 2006, history will tell you you should expect a Republican win. There has not been 2 years in a row any party, Democrats or Republicans, has gained this many seats in two elections in a row since, when? 1932 and 1934, Franklin Roosevelt's first election and the election.
Bill Maher told him, you know, when they got control of everything, the Republicans got control of it. He said, you're sore losers because they griped and complained and griped and complained all the time. And now
the Republicans telling me
they're still griping.
They sure are. I heard one Republican tell me, he sort of threw up his hands and said, all right, well, y'all are in control now. You deal with it. And I smiled and I said, we can't wait. I did. I had Republicans like, well, you know, the country's in a colossal mess. Go ahead, you deal with it. And I said, we can't wait to start to fix the mess you put this country in.
Can I say one more thing?
We are chomping at the bit. I assure you, we can't wait.
Can I say one more thing about my conversation? You know how they called Obama the Antichrist?
No, but it doesn't surprise me.
Well, they do. And I told her, I said, you know, if he is Antichrist, I said, don't you want him to go ahead and take control? Because I said, Hagee wants the war in Armageddon to start, and we got to have the Antichrist. And I told her, if he is going to take us down, I said, I'd rather go down with him than the other people. And that's the way I feel. But I don't believe he's going to try to do that.
I'll tell you, the reason I had Mike Lane on, a lot of people always ask, why do I have this hateful man on my show? I do think it's important to know what the other side is thinking. And I've got to say, the last week I've been very happy, except for California. I've been very happy. And we'll talk about that some more tomorrow. But overall, I've been very excited about the election.
Did you know that they found a bunch of votes in Alaska that have not been counted?
There's about, my understanding is there's like 40,000 or so. There's a huge number.
Well, now they're saying 90.
Wow.
They've added to the 40.
Wow. I was wondering, because I just don't understand how the felon got reelected, but I just thought, okay, Alaskans are just wacko people. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Maybe they'll get rid of him. And I also, in Minnesota, the margin is down to 204. All the way down. It used to be 700-something votes. It's down to 204. There's a bunch of votes there.
Georgia's a lot of injustices, too.
Yeah, Georgia's going to be a tougher one, but I think we've got a good chance of 58 or 59. Anyway, I was saying the reason I have Mike Lane on is I wanted to see really the Republican psyche, the Republican id. And I had heard so many Republicans, people like John McCain, wish Obama well, that I actually thought to my – I don't know why. Maybe I'm just deluded. I actually thought Mike was going to come on. He's going to say, you put up a good fight. You know, I wish Obama well. I hope he does well. And if he doesn't, we'll be there to take him down. I was surprised by the vitriol because I thought, okay, the election's over. Now we come together. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, and I got to tell you this, if the Republicans continue this way, the way Mike Lane has, the way Sarah Palin has, I think we will have a Democrat majority for many, many years to come. Thank you for your call, Juanita. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Got to tune out and get right to our hillbilly elitist, Bob Kincaid. See you tomorrow. This is Mark Levine signing off.